Hi, everyone. My name is Dedi Meiri, and I'm a professor at the Technion, which is the Technology Institute of Israel. In the last 7 years, I'm running the Laboratory for Cancer and Cannabinoids Research, when we're focusing on the effect of the active compounds of cannabinoids on different illnesses and effects, cancer and others. You are listening to Professionally Cannabis.
It gives me great pleasure to welcome back to the pod Dr. Dedi Meiri, a world-renowned cannabis researcher from the Technion in Israel. With over 90 scientists to work alongside Dedi on various projects, Dedi and his team tackle some of the most significant illnesses and conditions out there. Having joined us back in February 2020, I cannot wait to pick Dedi's brain. So, without further ado, Dedi, welcome back to the Professionally Cannabis podcast.
Hi, Jonathan. It's a pleasure to be here again. Thank you very much for inviting me.
It's a pleasure to have you as always. And as you know, Dedi, and as you've previously answered before, our typical opening question is what led you to the plant? But having already given us a wonderful background story on a previous interview about what led you to the plant, what I'm really keen to hear, what have you been doing with the plant since we last caught up about, 2.5 years ago?
So I think, from 2015, 16, when I started to work with cannabis, we established the bricks to build the building. So we established, the methods to analyze the compound, to separate them, to look inside, to look outside, how to grow and all, so on. And I think in the last 3 years, we succeed to combine these bricks and to see all these pieces of puzzle and to start to see pictures. And I'm exciting every day to come to the lab and to see the results and to understand. We started to understand what are the molecules in the cannabis that are doing specific effect and what are the mechanism of action that they're doing. And this is in few different indications, whether we are talking about sleep, that we succeed to narrow down to two specific molecules, two specific new phytocannabinoids that we see that actually are the reason and the cause that affecting our brain cells and affecting our sleep. We have major results in two types of cancers, one in leukemia and one in estrogen plus breast cancer, when we define the molecules affecting these cells and actually killing them. We have very exciting results related to inflammation or inflammatory bowel disease, understanding how we're affecting the immune system for one hand and the inflammatory cells from other cells. From other way, and I can go on with other few indications like migraine, headaches, and others. But I think the bottom line, we succeed to narrow down in each indication what are the compounds or the combinations of compounds that are doing that effect, and by that to start to learn why and how it's happened in our body. And I think the exciting thing about that we're succeeding to connect between, I will say, the herbal medicine or plant medicine to modern medicine. We're closing this gap of saying, okay, we know that cannabis affecting sleep, but here are the molecules and here are the reason and here why it's happening. And this is bring to the table the physicians, the scientists, and all the people that were skeptical about these kind of things. And I'm very excited and proud of that.
Well, a huge amount for us to dive into here. And you've mentioned a couple of times the research that you've been conducting on sleep. Would you be able to dive a little bit deeper into this and give us a flavor of the research, the cannabinoids that you're finding are particularly effective and how you're using these in a targeted way?
Yeah, so first of all, we need to understand that when we're talking about sleep or sleep disorder, we are talking about different indications. First of all, we are looking how fast somebody falling asleep and how easy for somebody to fall asleep. Then how strong or how deep the sleep is. Third, whether you're going to what we call effective sleep or REM sleep or dream sleep. It's actually changing hormones that being secreted in our body. Our bones are built in that period and so on. And the last one is how difficult for you is to wake up. And these are four different areas in the brain that being controlled. So I'm always giving this example. My mother, it takes her between 2 to 3 hours to fall asleep. She's turning around and everything. But after she's falling asleep, you can lift her and throwing her on the bed. She's not waking up. She's falling asleep, she's a dead wood, okay? But falling asleep is very difficult for her. I met a patient from Australia, it was 2 years ago, a little bit more, that have kind of insomnia, that in the last 4 years, he didn't sleep more than 3 minutes in a row. So he's falling asleep and waking up, falling asleep and waking up. While he's speaking with me, he was falling asleep and wake up. So he doesn't have a problem to fall asleep. He has a problem to maintain this sleep or to keep being sleeping. And this is totally different from my mother. It's actually the opposite. So when we're talking about sleep, we need to understand that these are different problems in different people. But it's not just different problems, it's being controlled or being organizing different areas of the brain. So what we did first, we took mice brains and we divide them in areas and check the endocannabinoid system. It's the role of the endocannabinoid system in every area in the brain that control different aspects of sleep and learn from that and where and how the endocannabinoid system is taking a part and role in our sleep architecture, which is give me the first hint where the cannabis can be affected. So not related to cannabis at all. In our regular, natural sleep, the endocannabinoid system, it's extremely, extremely important for whether falling asleep, keep the sleep deep, going to the REM sleep, wake up. It's all being controlled by the endocannabinoid system. So this is first thing. Then we build a mice model for sleep to test these four aspects. And in the past, between 2015 to 2020, we did a big database in Israel on patients. We actually did the Israeli database for cannabis, where every product came to our lab to full analysis on the phytocannabinoids, on the active compounds in the plant. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, we collect data from patients, whether this was through the healthcare, through the hospitals and clinics and pharmacies, whether this was through the GORS and so on. And what we saw, that more than 50% of the patient saying that the major effect that they are having is regarding sleep. It doesn't matter if we're talking about pain patient, PTSD patient, autistic kids, patient with cancer that getting chemotherapy and cannabis and so on. The first outcome, the primary outcome, was sleep. So patient can get cannabis because he's suffering from pain. But if you ask him what is the major outcome that he's getting from cannabis, said, I'm sleeping better. Mm-hmm. So we started to look at that. But more of that, we knew already what are the best strains in Israel that patients are reporting that help them to sleep in which part. So we didn't need to screen much. We knew what are the best strains, and we started to look deeper inside of them. What is the compound that doing that effect? We succeed to define one cannabis product that was very, very efficient on the patient or on falling asleep and keeping the sleep in the length of the sleep. We dive into that. We succeed to isolate from that extract, from that plant, two cannabinoids, which are unique new cannabinoids, both of them not known ones. We are the first one to analyze them to understand the structure, that we saw that if you're taking these two molecules alone, you're getting the same effect on the patient, on the mice. And we are in that stage trying to understand what exactly these molecules are doing, what are the ratio between them, and so on. But I think what is important, this was a high THC strain, high THC extract. When we're cutting the THC out, it's not affecting the effect of this extract on the sleep. And when we cut CBN out, it's still the same effect, even better. So we learned from that in this specific product, the THC and the CBN are not playing a role at all. It's other compound, and I think this is a new point of view that we didn't thought about that before. We believe that the THC and the CBN are critical, and we're learning that is not. And this brings us to actually kind of three new products that a patient can get. One of them is the whole extract, whether these are flowers or oil, that we already know that is very, very useful for sleep disorders. And this is, you know, at least we can guide the patient for this strain and extract. Second, still as a plant, still as a extract, but to fractionate it, to cut this oil in one place, which cutting out the THC and the CBN, and to left with an oil with zero psychoactive compounds. So an oil, which still on the medical cannabis route, zero THC, zero CBN, but give you all the benefits of sleep, which is very unique. And the third product is the isolate molecules, which we are not totally fully there yet, but we will be in a few months, I guess.
So there's a huge amount there that I'd like us to tap into, especially as someone myself who both struggles to get to sleep like your mother, but also struggles to stay in some sort of consistent sleep. This is particularly interesting for me. But something you mentioned a couple of moments ago was that you guys have discovered two new cannabinoids. Now, Deddy, you spoke about this in a very nonchalant way, but this sounds like massive news. How do you go about discovering a new cannabinoid, and what's the process for, I guess, sort of popularizing it, naming it, and getting it out there to the research community? Am I right in saying that this is massive news?
So, you know, it's my everyday. So for me, I don't see it as massive news.
You're too cool.
We profiled the cannabinoids few years ago, and we can see around 160 phytocannabinoids. From these 160, I would say around 40 are new phytocannabinoids that never been published, we didn't know the structure of them and everything. We know they're there, we know how they look, but we don't know a lot about them. When we have a phenotype, when we're looking for something, we see that a specific strain of cannabis reducing migraine attacks, okay? From that, we're trying to narrow it down of what are the molecules, what are the combination of the molecules in the cannabis that doing this effect. So in the migraine, for example, we discover a very unique molecules. It's kind of looking more than CBG structure, but with few oxygens in the aromatic ring, which make it less lipophilic, less hydrophobic, and then probably the bioavailability is much higher. But the process is to start to go, said, okay, this extract is reducing migraine. Let's start to narrow down. Let's start to cut it to pieces and to define which piece is doing this effect. And we're going by elimination until we're reaching the minimum compound they're doing the effect. Sometimes it's one compound, sometimes it's a combination of two, three, four, five. And we want to know what is the minimum compound they're doing this effect. In part of the times, it's new molecules that we don't know. And then what we're doing, we are purifying them from the plant. We send it to equipment called NMR that give you the idea of the structure. And when you understand the structure, you're starting to understand what is the biosynthesis of this in the plant, why it's doing this effect, why this structure of molecules will bind these receptors or not that receptor, and so on. We started to do, you know, more accurate biology and understanding. But yes, yeah, sometimes these are new compounds. The way to, as you said it, to popularize and do them, we are publishing, you know, academic papers, which showing the structure, the mechanism of action, and from there, all the community, the science community and the cannabis community can learn from that. We have 7 papers now that under revision to be published. In these 7 papers, at least 4 of them are with new compounds. So I guess it will, if you can speak with the editor of these journals to publish faster, I will be very happy.
I'll see what I can do.
It's always a struggle, yeah. Not always they understand the unique thing about it and the message and how much it's important to the community. But yes, we are there to publish. You know, in the end, I'm a scientist. I'm not keeping to myself anything. It's all will be published.
And in terms of taking this research, specifically with the two new cannabinoids that you mentioned that are looking particularly effective for sleep disorders, what's a sort of realistic timeline from moving this research from mice to people and then potentially medicine?
So I think regarding the whole plant in a fraction without THC and CBN, we're talking about few months, between I would say 2 to 6 months, until we will starting to commercialize that and to start to give it to patients. Regarding the single molecules, these are fast route, you know, pharma, you need to make them or whether synthetic or isolate from the plant to check safety and then to go clinical trial phase 1, phase 2, phase 3. We're talking about few years with a huge investment. But again, regarding the whole plant and what for me is extremely interesting, which is the whole plant, but without the psychoactive compound, so to cut them out and left with the same effect. I think this is a new, concept of using cannabis. I gave an example of my mother previously, and I will go with that. My mother, she's 79. She had a stroke a few years ago. She has body paralysis. She suffered from pain. She has a problem to fall asleep. She won't take cannabis as cannabis. She won't take something with a psychoactive effect. She's afraid to fall, not to be in balance. She don't like the you know, to feel stoned and so on. So having a natural product from cannabis that will help her to sleep, but without any psychoactive or consumption changes, I think it's a big deal. And it's the same for headaches or migraines. And it's the same for, let's say, menopause or endometriosis. If we can create a product which is still natural oils, totally medical cannabis, but cutting out the THC, the CBN, the THCV, the psychoactive the effects, I think it's a very interesting new product.
Yeah, 100%, especially for wider commercialization in the medical market. I'd love us to stay on the sleep topic, but you've just been working on way too much stuff for us to. So, Deddy, we're going to move over to the big C, cancer. This is an area where you have really specialized in cannabis research for many, many years. You mentioned before that you've recently finished a number of preclinical studies and preclinical work, and now moving into the clinical side. Please tell us about this.
We're doing a lot of study. A third of my team is working on cancer. And first of all, just to be more accurate, many cancer patients getting cannabis, but to improve their quality of life.
Yes. So typically when we've spoken about cancer before and other researchers and doctors and clinicians are speaking about cancer, it's often more in the realms of symptom management rather than anything curative, correct?
Right. So that this is not the question. You know, cannabis is helping with sleep. We're helping with reducing nausea, with pain, with improving the mood and reducing anxiety. Is giving something very holistic for this cancer patient to sustain the chemotherapy or the radiation and to help with the quality of life. And this is not a question. And in Israel, there is, I think around 25,000 patients that getting a cancer patient that getting prescription of cannabis to help with the symptoms and so on. But the big question then, what we're dealing on whether cannabis can fight the cancer, can replace the chemotherapy and the radiation. And there is a big movement in the world with Derek Simpson oil and things that people believe that cannabis is really can fight the cancer cells. So this is the question that we're asking, and we're working on around different types of cancer. You know, cancer, it's a given name to 100 of different diseases. Breast cancer, prostate cancer, liver and cancer, and glioblastoma are different diseases. We call them cancer. We put them in a block. It's called the six hallmarks. So every time that there is A, B, C, D, and E, we will call it cancer. But we are treating that as totally different creatures. So my lab is working on different types of cancers, and we have success in major three of them. One of them is leukemia. There is a specific mutation called Notch 1 mutation, which driving the cells or pushing the cells to proliferate more and to create cancer. And 50% of the leukemia patient, mainly the TLL, but also the CLL and the AML, are harboring this mutation. What we defined, we found a high CBD strain that every time that there is leukemia with this mutation, this strain is killing the cells. And we succeed to define three specific molecules. One of them is unknown, and the other two is known. That every time that you have the three of these molecules, they will kill the cells. But we succeed to crack all the mechanism, exactly what's happening in the cell, which receptors they are binding. They are binding CB2 and TRPV1. Is they're activating a specific protein called CERMID, and then a cascade of event in the cell that in the end blocking the Notch 1 mutated to be active. So we succeed to crack all the mechanism of action and to explain to the basic and the bottom why these molecules of the cannabis is killing the cells when there is mutation, and when there is no mutation, it's not affecting the cells. And we did five different mice models for that, from solid tumors to bone marrow implantation. We use primary cells directly from patient in the mice and not in the mice. We did everything, what we called preclinical. And from now, we're moving to clinical clinical experiment on humans. We're just raising money for that. We kind of opened a company that raised money to take it to clinical. So this is one aspect of cancer. A different one is breast cancer, which called estrogen plus. Breast cancer divided in four groups, even though there is many other groups. It's hormonal sensitive, which is estrogen progesterone, HER plus, which is a different protein, and triple negative, meaning it's none of these three. More than 60% of the breast cancer patient will be a hormonal sensitive, meaning they need the estrogen or the progesterone hormone in order to leave these cells and to proliferate, divide it, and to grow. For that reason, usually a patient, a woman with these types of breast cancer, if it's earlier than age 50 or 50-some, it will be very aggressive one, but later after menopause, when there is less these hormones in the women body, it will be less aggressive because they must have these hormones. There are good drugs for that, that blocking these hormones to get to the breast cancer breast cells, and by that blocking the ability of the breast cells to divide them because they are they need these hormones in order to grow. But the problems of these drugs, families of drugs called SERMs and the most known one called tamoxifen, that the women need to take them chronically between 5 to 10 years. And there is quite a severe side effect to these drugs, changing all the hormonal balance and other problems. And usually women in the beginning, after they know that they have cancer and their sky fall on the head, will take this drug, but more than 30% of the women will stop after 1 year. More than 50% will stop after 3 years. So they are not finishing the treatment, which cause a problem or the fear that the cancer will come back. What we found a specific strain of cannabis that make the cells to be way more sensitive to these drugs. So you can reduce 20 times the dose of the tamoxifen and get the same effect. Wow. In cancer, it's called priming. You prime the cells to the drug, or you make them more sensitive to the drug. And we defined, again, a new molecule, new phytocannabinoids, not a known one, that actually blocking the estrogen receptor to enter to the nucleus, and by that reducing all this, the downstream effectors of these estrogen receptors and so on, and make the cells more sensitive to the drug. Again, we proved it in a mice model, and we're going to clinical trials. But what is very unique, and this is teaching us sometimes why it's important to understand the mechanism of action. One of the major side effects of these serums, of these tamoxifen and the similar drugs that have been given to women, that in the breast cells, it's blocking the estrogen activity. But actually in other cells, like in ovarian cells, it's doing exactly the opposite and activating the estrogen. So one of the major side effects is that the ovarian become more thicker, and there is a problem if you're a young woman to get pregnant, and there is changing the hormones, and there is many problems. What we learn that the molecules from the cannabis is doing this different effect on the breast cells, or actually the same effect on the breast cells and other cells. So if the tamoxifen drugs are activating the estrogen in the ovarian cells, the molecules from the cannabis is blocking the estrogen in the ovarian as it's blocking the breast. And this is open a new area of study in my lab, mainly on endometriosis, because endometriosis are ovarian cells that are going in the wrong direction and create a lot of pains and up to create almost a cancer. And one of 10 women in the world suffering from endometriosis, whether these are period pains, severe period pains, and then more and more severe endometriosis. And there is no treatment today. The treatment is to give a different hormone that kind of competing with the estrogen. And we are coming with first time kind of solution of molecules that blocking the estrogen in these cells. And this is extremely, extremely exciting with a good preclinical result. So, you know, from going after a breast cancer cells, we kind of finding a treatment also for endometriosis and other things. So again, very, very exciting results. The third one, and then stop me if I'm exhausting you or giving too much details.
No, please go for it.
The third one, it's called the tumor microenvironment. Tumors need to change the microenvironment they are living with in order to sustain and to grow. And one of the first things that the tumor cells will do, they suppressing the immune cells to attack them and actually changing the profile of the immune cells that reaching the tumor. Instead of the immune cells will fight the tumor now, the immune cells help them bringing growth factors, bringing oxygen and other things and helping the tumors. One of the things that today we are doing in order to fight cancer, it's what we call the immunotherapy, when we are kind of teaching the immune cells to attack or to understand that these cells are not a friend, they are enemy. And what one of my PhD students find, she find a specific extract, and after that she defined the specific molecules that are more known molecules, that changing the profile of cytokines that the tumor release, or if to flatten that and to set it in another way, it's blocking the ability of the tumor to suppress the immune system. So when you're treating with this cannabis, the cancer cells can't anymore suppress the immune cells, and the immune cells will start to attack the tumor and to shrink it. And this is very exciting because all the drugs, immunotherapy drugs, I don't know if all, because I'm not an expert for that, but the one that I know or familiar, like PD-L1 and other, and Keytruda and other, are actually affecting the immune cells to attack the tumor. But the tumor still have this kind of defense that is starting, trying to suppress it. What we are bringing is blocking the ability of the immune, of the cancer cells to have this shed or to have this suppression. So I think combining the immunotherapy that exists in today with these results that we have, it's kind of making the tumor way more vulnerable. And I think we did it just as a preclinical, but I think if it will work in clinical, this is a breakthrough in many types of cancers. So, you know, the other two results that I was speaking was on specific cancer, leukemia with NOTCH1, and this is breast cancer with estrogen plus. But here is something more general that if it will really work in humans, it's really, really, really breakthrough. And the results are phenomenal, literally. Like, you know, sometimes I'm looking at that and I think that I'm living the dream that my students succeed to do these kind of things, literally. So this is extremely exciting.
Well, this is absolutely incredible stuff here. So would I be right in saying that this new research that you're uncovering, you know, you could really leverage cannabis and certain compounds from the plant to work, I guess, synergistically with more traditional cancer medicines themselves to sort of attack the cancer cells in a two-pronged way. Is that right?
Exactly. That's right. That's what we see and that's what we're aiming, and it looks that it's working perfectly. So think about that. These patients that getting this treatment are getting cannabis anyway. We started this conversation saying that they're getting it for the
symptom management. Yeah.
So if you just know to define which cannabis is the best for them, you will get two benefits. You will get, first of all, the same thing that they're getting today, like reducing all the symptoms, but on the other way, improving the chemotherapy or the drug or the treatment that they're getting. So this is a win-win situation. For one hand, you're reducing side effects and then improving the quality of life. For other hand, can fight better the cancers, which is, you know, if it will work, or I believe it's working, it's huge. It's amazing result.
And how can people track your research here and the progress of the work that's being done by you and your team? This is really incredible stuff.
So first of all, as I said, I'm a scientist and I publish academic papers, and there is, you know, you can follow, there is a site called PubMed, which all the science and all the, you know, biological medicine, everything that's related mm-hmm. to biology being published there. And you can find all my publication there. Part of the things are still not published. And there is the site of the lab that sometimes showing things. But in the end, Jonathan, I'm a scientist that, you know, when I have results, I will try to publish them in scientific journals and things like that. And sometimes, you know, I'm also participate podcast and tell about that. So this is another way.
And Deddy, if any of our listeners have particularly deep pockets and a penchant for sponsoring research projects and getting involved with furthering this amazing array of research, what are the best ways to support research like this?
So, you know, I don't want it to become that I'm doing this podcast in order to raise money, because it's far from that.
No. And that's, you know, I think traditional listeners of the pod know that's not the case.
Yeah, I'm grateful to put it, but just to be clear, I didn't ask that, and it wasn't something that we planned.
This is a free plug.
So look, in order to do this science, we're pouring tons of money, and we need the support, and this is not a question. I think third of my time is trying to raise grants and money to this study. And I will divide it in two, you know. In one way is to support the study, the academic study, when you're doing something that you don't know where the potential, where it's going, and we need this support to the lab at the Technion, which is extremely, extremely important. And then, you know, people can approach me or approach the Technion, and there is academic grants and there is donation, and there is also supporting, you know, study and getting first offer, first look on the results and the IP that's coming. There is many ways of doing that. And second part is supporting really the clinical trials. And by that, we have a company. I opened a company together with the Technion that taking these trials and taking these to commercialization. But I'm looking at even more to touch really people and to go there that way. So I have a company called Canisol that's sitting in Caesarea, which is my, let's say, business arm that's doing a lot when commercializing things like we talk about the sleep and the migraine and that. And I have another company that is focused on the cancer and taking these results that we talk about, the leukemia and the breast cancer, to clinical trials. And Jonathan, one of the reasons I'm doing that, it's because when I had these results 2 years ago and I wanted pharma company to take it to clinical trials, I realized that there is a wall. Pharma company didn't really want to touch cannabis or more complicated experiment. They didn't understand the medical cannabis route. The specific compounds look to them too complicated, and they said, it's not for us. The cannabis companies, the big companies, you know, from Aurora, Tilray, Columbia Care, or whatever names we're throwing, that day's worth billions of dollars, you know, $14-20 billion, you know, Canopy, they changed their scopes by saying we are pharma to say we are more adult use. And they actually kind of step backward in, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, these companies support the studies in my lab and gave a lot of money because they believe there will be medicines and drugs. Today, they come kind of back off and said, we're not dealing with really medicine. We are selling adult use. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And this leave these results kind of without clothes, you know, without mother and fathers. And the pharma said, it's not for us. The cannabis company said, it's too complicated and we are not really pharma. And so I said, okay, I will do it by myself. And I opened a company, raised money for that and take it by myself to clinical trials, believing that after phase one, phase two, after the beginning, when we will have good results, then we can find real partners like big pharma or big cannabis companies to support the next round. It's not trivial today to take a really cannabis to pharma, because you're sitting in kind of on the fence between the recreational adult use to pharma companies. None of them really want to do the real things, which I guess it will change when the results will started to commercialize and to go to trials. But that's reality.
Well, Dedi, as you know, I have just endless admiration for yourself, the work that you and your team do. And we're absolutely going to have to get you back on the pod really soon, because we haven't even touched upon any of the neurodegenerative diseases that I know you've also done so much work on. So we're going to have to get you back soon enough. But for the time being, the clock has unfortunately beaten us. So I'd like to say, Dedi, once again, thank you so much for joining us on the Professionally Cannabis podcast.
Jonathan, thank you for having me, and I agree with you. I'm feeling like I didn't even start to speak about our science and work, so we will need to reschedule another time.
But 100%.
Thank you very much for having me. It's always a pleasure to have this conversation, and thanks everybody for listening.